and gesturing. The wind carried down shreds of laughter I recognized as quacks, but distance rendered the rest inaudible. Their faceplates were hinged up, but otherwise they were swim-prepped and still armed to the teeth. The other soldiers Lamonaco had detailed to back them up stood around a mobile ultravibe cannon in similar casual alertness. Farther down the beach, another knot of wedge uniforms busied themselves with what looked like the components for a blast shield generator. Others moved back and forth from the Anjin Chandra's Virtue to the Pol Alloy cabin and the other bubble fabs, carrying crates that could have been anything. Behind and above the scene, lights gleamed from the bridge of the Chandra and at the loading level, where onboard cranes swung more equipment out of the battle wagon's belly and down onto the lamplit sand. "So how come the mob suit?" I asked Lamonaco as he led us down toward the unloading area. He shrugged. "Cable batteries at Rayong. Our tinsel systems went down in a bad time. Got my left leg, hip bone, ribs, some of the left arm." "Shit. You have all the luck, Tony." "It's not so bad. Just taking a fuck of a long time to heal, right? Doc says the cables were coated with some kind of carcinogenic, and it's fucking up the rapid regrowth." He grimaced. "Been like this for 3 weeks now. Real drag." "Well, thanks for coming out to us, especially in that state." "No worries. Easier getting about and back than here, anyway. Once you're wearing the mob suit, Pol Alloy's just another layer." "I guess." Carrera was waiting below the Chandra's loading hatch, dressed in the same field coveralls he'd worn earlier, and talking to a small, similarly attired group of ranking officers. A couple of non-coms were busy with mounted equipment up on the edge of the hatch. About halfway between the Chandra and the blast shield detail, a ragged-looking individual in a stained uniform perched on a powered-down load lifter, staring at us out of bleary eyes. When I stared back, he laughed and shook his head convulsively. One hand lifted to rub viciously at the back of his neck, and his mouth gaped open as if someone had just drenched him with a bucket of cold water. His face twitched in tiny spasms that I recognized. Wirehead tremors. Maybe he saw the grimace pass across my face.
"Oh yeah, look that way," he snarled. "You're not so smart, not so fucking smart. Got you for anti-humanism. Got you all filed away. Heard you all on your counter-cartel servants. How do you like..."
"Shut up, Lamont." There wasn't much volume in Lamonico's voice, but the wirehead jerked as if he'd just been jacked in. His eyes slipped around in their sockets alarmingly, and he cowered. At my side, Lamonaco sneered. "Political officer," he said, and towed some sand in the shivering wreck of a human's direction. "All the fucking same. All mouth."
"You seem to have this one leashed."
"Yeah, well," Lamonaco grinned. "You'd be amazed how quickly these political guys lose interest in their job once they've been socketed up and plugged in a few times. We haven't had a correct thought lecture all month. And the personal files, well, I've read 'em, and our own mothers couldn't have written nicer things about us. Amazing how all that political dogma just sort of fades away. Isn't that right, Lamont?"
The political officer cringed away from Lamonaco. Tears leaked into his eyes.
"Works better than the beatings used to," said the non-com, looking at Lamont dispassionately. "You know, with Fibon and... what was that other shit-mouth little turd called?"
"Portillo," I said absently.
"Yeah, him. See, you could never be sure if he was really beaten or if he'd come back at you and he'd licked his wounds a bit. We don't have that problem anymore. Think it's the shame that does it. Once you've cut the socket and shown them how to hook up, they do it themselves. And then when you take it away, works like magic. I've seen old Lamont here break his nails trying to get the interface cables out of a locked kit pack."
"Why don't you leave him alone?"
Tanya Wardani said unevenly.
"Can't you see he's already broken?"
Lamonaco shot her a curious glance. "Civilian?" he asked me. I nodded.
"Pretty much. She's, on secondment."
"Well, that can work sometimes."
Carrera seemed to have finished his briefing as we approached, and the surrounding officers were beginning to disperse. He nodded acknowledgement at Lamonaco.
"Thank you, Sergeant. Did I see Lamont giving you some grief up there?"
The non-com grinned wolfishly.
"Nothing he didn't regret, sir. Think maybe it's time he was deprived again, though."
"I'll give that some thought, Sergeant."
"Yes, sir."
"Meanwhile..."
Carrera shifted his focus.
"Lieutenant Kovac, there are a few..."
"Just a moment, Commander."
It was Han's voice,
remarkably poised and polished, given the state he must be in. Carrera paused.
Yes?
I'm sure you're aware of who I am, Commander, as I am aware of the intrigues and landfall that have led to your being here. You may not, however, be aware of the extent to which you have been deceived by those who sent you.
Carrera met my gaze and raised an eyebrow. I shrugged.
No, you're mistaken, the Wedge Commander said politely. I am quite well informed of the extent to which your Mandrake colleagues have been economical with the truth. To be honest, I expected no less.
I heard the silence as Han's exec training stumbled. It was almost worth a grin.
In any case, Carrera went on, the issue of objective truth doesn't much concern me here. I have been paid.
Less than you could have been, Han rallied with admirable speed. My business here is authorized at cartel level.
Not anymore. Your grubby little friends have sold you out, Han.
Then that was their error, Commander. There seems no reason for you to share in it. Believe me, I have no desire for retribution to fall where it is not deserved.
Carrera smiled faintly.
Are you threatening me?
There is no need to view things in such...
I asked if you were threatening me.
The Wedge Commander's tone was mild.
I'd appreciate a straight yes or no.
Han sighed. Let us just say that there are forces I may invoke that my colleagues have not considered, or at least not assessed correctly.
Oh, yes, I forgot. You are a believer.
Carrera seemed fascinated by the man in front of him.
A Haugen. You believe that spiritual powers can be hired in much the same way as soldiers?
Beside me, Lamonico sniggered. Han sighed again.
Commander, what I believe is that we are both civilized men, and...
The blaster tore through him. Carrera must have set it for diffuse beam. You don't usually get as much damage as that from the little ones, and the thing in the Wedge Commander's hand was an ultra-compact. A hint of bulk inside the closed fist. A fish-tailed snap-out projector between his second and third knuckle. Spare heat, the envoy in me noticed, still dissipating from the discharge end in visible waves. No recoil, no visible flash, and no punch backward where it hit. The crackle snarled past my ears, and Han stood there blinking with a smoking hole in his guts. Then he must have caught the stench of his own seared intestines, and, looking down, he made a high-pitched hooting noise that was as much panic as pain. The ultra-compacts take a while to recharge, but I didn't need peripheral vision to tell me jumping Carrera would be a mistake. Non-coms on the loading deck above, Lamonico beside me, and the little knot of Wedge officers hadn't dispersed at all. They'd just fanned out and given us room to walk into the setup. Neat. Very neat. Han staggered, still wailing, and sat down hard on his backside in the sand. Some brutal part of me wanted to laugh at him. His hands pawed the air close to the gaping wound. I know that feeling, some other part of me recalled, surprised into brief compassion. It hurts, but you don't know if you dare touch it.
"Mistaken again," said Carrera to the ripped-open executive's feet.
His tone hadn't shifted since the shooting.
"I am not a civilized man, Han. I'm a soldier, a professional savage, and I'm for rent to men just like you. I wouldn't like to say what that makes you, except out of fashion back at the Mandrake Tower, that is."
The noise Han was making shaped toward a conventional scream. Carrera turned to look at me.
"Oh, you can relax, Kovach. Don't tell me you haven't wanted to do that before now."
I manufactured a shrug. "Once or twice, I probably would have gotten around to it."
"Well, now you don't have to."
On the ground, Han twisted and propped himself. Something that might have been words emerged from his agony. At the edge of my vision, a couple of figures moved toward him. Peripheral scan, still squeezed to aching point by the adrenaline surge, identified Suchiati and, well, well, Tanya Wardani. Carrera waved them back.
"No, there's no need for that."
Hand was definitely speaking now. A ruptured hissing of syllables that weren't any language I knew, or, except once, had heard. His left hand was raising toward Carrera, fingers oddly splayed. I crouched to his level, oddly moved by the contorted strength on his face.
"What's this?"
The wedge commander leaned closer.
What's he saying?
I sat back on my heels. I think you're being cursed.
Oh, well, I suppose that's not unreasonable under the circumstances. Still...
Carrera swung a long, heavy kick into the exec's side. Hands' incantations shredded apart in a scream, and he rolled into a fetal ball.
No reason why we have to listen to it, either. Sergeant?
Lamonico stepped forward.
Sir! Your knife, please.
Yes, sir.
Give Carrera credit. I'd never seen him ask any man in his command to carry out work he wouldn't do himself. He took the vibro-knife from Lamonico, activated it, and kicked Hand again, stamping him onto his belly in the sand. The exec screams blurred into coughing and whooping and sucked breath. Carrera knelt across his back and started cutting. Hand's muffled shrieking scaled abruptly up as he felt the blade enter his flesh, and then stopped dead as Carrera sliced his spinal column through.
Better, muttered the wedge commander.
He made the second incision at the base of the skull, a lot more elegantly than I had back in the landfall promoter's office, and dug out the section of severed spine. Then he powered off the knife, wiped it carefully on Hand's clothing, and got up. He handed knife and spinal segment to Lamonico with a nod.
Thank you, Sergeant. Get that to Hammond. Tell him not to lose it. We just earned ourselves a bonus.
Yes, sir.
Lamonico looked at the faces around us. And,
Oh, yes.
Carrera raised one hand. His face seemed suddenly tired.
That.
His hand fell like something discarded. From the loading deck above, I heard the discharge. A muffled crump, followed by a chitinous rustling. I looked up and saw what looked like a swarm of crippled nanocopters tumbling down through the air. I made the intuitive leap to what was going to happen with a curious detachment. A lack of combat reflex that must have had its roots in the mingled radiation sickness and tetrameth come-down. I'd just had time to look at Suchiati. He caught my eye and his mouth twitched. He knew as well as I did. As well as if there'd been a scarlet decal pulsing across the screen of our vision. Game. Then it was raining spiders. Not really, but it looked that way. They'd fired the crowd control mortar almost straight up. A low-power crimped load for limited dispersal. The gray, fist-sized inhibitors fell in a circle not much wider than 20 meters. The ones at the nearest edge glanced off the curving side of the battle wagon's hull before they hit the sand, skidding and flailing for purchase with a minute intensity that I later recalled almost with amusement. The others bedded directly in puffs of turquoise sand and scuttled up out of the tiny craters they'd made like the tiny jeweled crabs in Tanya Wardani's tropical paradise virtuality. They fell in thousands. Game. They dropped on our heads and shoulders, soft as children's cradle toys, and clung. They scuttled toward us across the sand and scrambled up our legs. They endured batting and shaking and clamored on undeterred. The one Suchiati and the others tore loose and flung away landed in a whirl of limbs and scuttled back unharmed. They crouched knowledgeably above nerve points and plunged filament-thin tendril fangs through clothing and skin. Game. They bit in. Over. Chapter 38. There was no less reason for adrenaline to be pumping through my system than anyone else's. But the slow seep of radioactive damage had shriveled my sleeve's capacity to deliver combat chemicals. The inhibitors reacted accordingly. I felt the nerve snap go through me, but it was a mild numbness, a fizzing that only dropped me to one knee. The Maori sleeves were readier for a fight, and so they took it harder. Duprez and Suchiati staggered and crashed into the sand as if shot with stunners. Vongsavath managed to control her fall and rolled to the ground on her side, eyes wide. Tanya Wardani just stood there, looking dazed.
"Thank you, gentlemen."
It was Carrera, calling up to the non-coms manning the mortar.
"Exemplary grouping."
Neural inhib remotes. State-of-the-art public order tech. Cleared colonial embargo only a couple of years ago. In my capacity as a local military advisor, I'd had the shiny new system demonstrated to me in crowds in Indigo City. I'd just never been on the receiving end before now. Chill, an enthusiastic young public order corporal had told me with a grin. That's all you need to do. Of course, that's extra funny in a riot situation. This shit lands on you, you're just going to get more dreamed up. Means they just go on biting you. Maybe even stop your heart in the end. Have to be fucking Zen-rigged to break the spiral. And you know what? We're short on Zen riot activists this season. I held the envoy calm like a crystal, wiped my mind of consequence, and got up. The spiders clung and flexed a little as I moved, but they didn't bite again.
Shit, Lieutenant, you're coated. They must like you.
LaMonica stood grinning at me from within a circle of clear sand while surplus inhibitor units crawled around on the outer edge of the field his clean tag must be throwing down. A little to his right, Carrera moved in a similar pool of immunity. I glanced around and saw the other wedge officers, untouched and watching. Neat. Very fucking neat. Behind them, Political Officer Lamont capered and pointed at us, jabbering. Oh well. Who could blame him?
"Yes, I think we'd better get you brushed off," said Carrera. "I'm sorry for the shock, Lieutenant Kovach, but there was no other comfortable way to detain this criminal."
He was pointing at Succiati. "Actually, Carrera, you could have just sedated everybody in the ward fab, but that wouldn't have been dramatic enough. And where transgressors against the wedge are concerned, the men do like their stylized drama, don't they?" I felt a brief chill run along my spine, chasing the thought, and tamped it down quick, before it could become the fear or anger that would wake up the coat of spiders I wore. I went for weary laconic. "What the fuck are you talking about, Isaac?"
"This man,"
Carrera's voice was pitched to carry,
"may have misrepresented himself to you as Jean Ping. His real name is Marcus Succiati, and he is wanted for crimes against wedge personnel."
"Yeah."
LaMonica lost his grin. "Fucker wasted Lieutenant Voyton and his platoon sergeant."
"Voyton?"
I looked back at Carrera. "Thought he was down around Bootkinnery."
"Yes, he was."
The wedge commander was staring down at Succiati's crumpled form. For a moment, I thought he was going to shoot him there and then with a blaster.
"Until this piece of shit cut insubordinate and finished up feeding Voyton his own sunjet. Killed Voyton really dead. Stack gone. Sergeant Bradwell went the same way when she tried to stop it. And two more of my men got their sleeves carved apart before someone locked this motherfucker down."
"No one gets away with that,"
LaMonica said somberly.
"Right, Lieutenant? No local yokel takes down wedge personnel and walks away from it. Shitheads for the anatomizer."
"Is this true?" I asked Carrera for appearance's sake. He met my gaze and nodded.
"Eyewitnesses, it's open and shut."
Succiati stirred at his feet like something stomped on. They cleaned the spiders off me with a deactivator broom and then dumped them into a storage canister. Carrera handed me a tag, and the approaching tide of unoccupied inhibitors fell back as I snapped it on.
"About that debriefing," he said,
and gestured me aboard the Chandra. Behind me, my colleagues were led back to the bubble fab, stumbling as feeble adrenaline jags of resistance set off new ripples of bites from their new neural jailers. In the post-performance space we'd all left, the non-coms who'd fired the mortar went around with untamped canisters, gathering up the still-crawling units that hadn't managed to find a home. Succiati caught my eye again as he was leaving. Imperceptibly, he shook his head. He needn't have worried. I was barely up to climbing the entry ramp into the battle wagon's belly, let alone taking on Carrera in empty-handed combat. I clung to the remaining fragments of the tetrameth lift and followed the wedge commander along tight, equipment-wrecked corridors, up a hand-wrung lined grav chute, and into the confines of what appeared to be his personal quarters.
"Sit down, Lieutenant, if you can find the space."
The cabin was cramped, but meticulously tidy. A powered-down grav bed rested on the floor in one corner, under a desk that hinged out from the bulkhead. The work surface held a compact data coil, a neat stack of book chips, and a pot-bellied statue that looked like Hun home art. A second table occupied the other end of the narrow space, studded with projector gear. Two hollows floated near the ceiling at angles that allowed viewing from the bed. One showed a spectacular image of Adoracion from high orbit, sunrise just breaking across the green and orange rim.
The other was a family group. Carrera and a handsome olive-skinned woman, arms possessively encompassing the shoulders of three variously aged children. The Wedge Commander looked happy, but the sleeve in the hollow was older than the one he was wearing now. I found a Spartan metal desk chair beside the projector table. Carrera watched me sit down, and then leaned against the desk, arms folded.
"Been home recently?" I asked, nodding at the orbital hollow. His gaze stayed on my face.
"It's been a while. Kovacs, you knew damned well that Suchiati was wanted by the Wedge, didn't you?"
"I still don't know he is Suchiati. Hans sold him to me as Zhang. What makes you so sure?"
He almost smiled.
"Nice try. My tower-dweller friends gave me gene codes for the combat sleeves. That plus the sleeving data from the Mandrake stack. They were quite keen for me to know that Han had a war criminal working for him. Added incentive, I imagine they saw it as. Grist to the deal."
War criminal. I looked elaborately around the cabin. That's an interesting choice of terminology. For someone who oversaw the Decatur pacification, I mean.
"Suchiati murdered one of my officers, an officer he was supposed to be taking orders from. Under any combat convention I know of, that's a crime."
"An officer? Voighten?" I couldn't quite work out why I was arguing, unless it was out of a general sense of inertia. "Come on, would you take orders from Dog Voighten?"
"Happily, I don't have to. But his platoon did, and they were fanatically loyal, all of them. Voighten was a good soldier."
"They called him Dog for a reason, Isaac."
"We are not engaged in a popularity contest."
I sketched a smile of my own. "That line's getting a little old. Voighten was a fucking asshole, and you know it. If this Suchiati torched him, he probably had a good reason."
"Reasons do not make you right, Lieutenant Kovacs."
There was a sudden softness in Carrera's tone that said I'd overstepped the line.
"Every graft-wrapped pimp on Plaza de los Caídos has a reason for every whore's face they carve up. But that doesn't make it right. Joshua Kemp has reasons for what he does, and from his point of view, they might even be good ones. That doesn't make him right."
"You want to watch what you're saying, Isaac. That sort of relativism could get you arrested."
"I doubt it. You've seen Lamont."
"Yeah." Silence ebbed and flowed around us. "So," I said finally, "you're going to put Suchiati under the anatomizer?"
"Do I have a choice?"
I just looked at him.
"We are the Wedge, Lieutenant. You know what that means."
There was the slightest tug of urgency in his tone now. I don't know who he was trying to convince.
"You were sworn in just like everyone else. You know the codes. We stand for unity in the face of chaos, and everyone has to know that. Those we deal with have to know that we are not to be fucked with. We need that fear if we're going to operate effectively. And my soldiers have to know that that fear is an absolute, that it will be enforced. Without that, we fall apart."
I closed my eyes. "Whatever."
"I'm not requiring you to watch it."
"I doubt there'll be enough seats." Behind my closed eyelids, I heard him move. When I looked, he was leaning over me, hands braced on the edges of the projector table, face harsh with anger.
"You're going to shut up now, Kovacs. You're going to stand down that attitude."
If he was looking for resistance, he couldn't have seen any in my face. He backed off half a meter, straightened up.
"I won't let you piss away your commission like this. You're a capable officer, Lieutenant. You inspire loyalty in the men you lead, and you understand combat."
"Thanks."
"You can laugh, but I know you. It's a fact."
"It's the biotech, Isaac. Wolf gene pack dynamics. Serotonin shutout and envoy psychosis to pilot the whole fucking shambles. A dog could do what I've done for the Wedge. Dog fucking Boynton, for example."
"Yes."
A shrug as he settled himself on the edge of the desk again.
"You and Boynton were very similar in profile. I have the psychosurgeon assessments on file here, if you don't believe me. Same Kemmerich gradient, same IQ, same lack of generalizable empathy range. To the untutored eye, you could be the same man."
"Yeah, except he's dead. Even to the untutored eye, that's got to stand out."
Well, maybe not quite the same lack of empathy, then. The envoys gave you enough diplomatic training not to underestimate men like Succiati. You would have handled him better.
So Succiati's crime was he got underestimated? Seems as good a reason as any to torture a man to death, I suppose.
He stopped and stared at me.
Lieutenant Kovacs, I don't think I'm making myself clear. Succiati's execution is not under discussion here. He murdered my soldiers, and at dawn tomorrow I will exact the penalty for that crime. I may not like it.
How gratifyingly humane of you.
He ignored me. But it needs to be done, and I will do it. And you, if you know what's good for you, will ratify it.
Or else? I wasn't as defiant as I'd have liked, and I spoiled it at the end with a coughing fit that racked me over in the narrow chair and brought up blood-streaked phlegm. Carrera handed me a wipe.
You were saying?
I said, if I won't ratify the ghoul show, what happens to me?
Then I'll inform the men that you knowingly attempted to protect Succiati from wedge justice.
I looked around for somewhere to toss the soiled wipe. Is that an accusation?
Under the table. No, there, next to your leg. Kovacs, it doesn't matter whether you did it or not. I think you probably did, but I don't really care one way or the other. I have to have order, and justice must be seen to be done. Fit in with that, and you can have your rank back, plus a new command. If you step out of line, you'll be next on the slab.
Lamonico and Quok won't like that.
No, they won't. But they are Wedge soldiers, and they will do as they're told for the good of the Wedge.
So much for inspiring loyalty.
Loyalty is a currency like any other. What you have earned, you can spend. And shielding a known murderer of Wedge personnel is more than you can afford. More than any of us can afford.
He leaned off the desk edge. Beneath the coveralls, Envoy Scan read his stance as endgame. It was the way he always stood in the final round of sparring sessions that had gone down to the wire. The way I'd seen him stand when the government troops broke around us at Shalai Gap, and Kemp's airborne infantry swept down out of the storm front sky like hail. There was no fallback from here.
I do not want to lose you, Kovacs, and I do not want to distress the soldiers who have followed you. But in the end, the Wedge is more than any one man within it. We cannot afford internal dissent.
Outnumbered and outgunned and left for dead at Shalai, Carrera held position in the bombed-out streets and buildings for 2 hours, until the storm swept in and covered everything. Then he led a stalk-and-slaughter counteroffensive through the howling wind and street-level shreds of cloud, until the airwaves crackled stiff with panicked airborne commanders ordering withdrawal. When the storm lifted, Shalai Gap was littered with the Kempis dead, and the Wedge had taken less than 24 casualties. He leaned close again, no longer angry. His eyes searched my face.
Am I finally making myself clear, Lieutenant? A sacrifice is required. We may not like it, you and I, but that is the price of Wedge membership.
I nodded.
Then you are ready to move past this?
I'm dying, Isaac. About all I'm ready for right now is some sleep.
I understand. I won't keep you much longer. Now.
He gestured through the data coil, and it awoke in swirls. I sighed and groped after fresh focus.
The penetration squad took an extrapolated line back from the Najini's angle of re-entry and fetched up pretty damn close to the same docking bay you breached. Lamonico says there were no apparent shutout controls. So how did you get in?
Was already open. I couldn't be bothered to construct lies. Guessed in any case that he'd interrogate the others soon enough. For all we know, there are no shutout controls.
On a warship?
His eyes narrowed.
I find that hard to believe.
Isaac, the whole ship mounts a spatial shield that stands at least 2 kilometers out from the hull. What the fuck would they need with individual docking station shutout?
You saw that?
Yeah, very much in action. He made a couple of minor adjustments in the coil.
The sniffer units found human traces a good 3 or 4 kilometers into the interior. but they found you in an observation bubble not much more than a kilometer and a half from your entry point.
Well, that couldn't have been hard. We painted the way with big fucking aluminum arrows. He gave me a hard look.
Did you go walk about in there?
Not me, no. I shook my head, then regretted it, as the little cabin pulsed unpleasantly in and out of focus around me. I waited it out. Some of them did. I never found out how far they went.
Doesn't sound very organized.
It wasn't, I said irritably. I don't know, Isaac. Try and incubate a sense of wonder, huh? Might help when you get over there.
So it, appears.
He hesitated, and it took me a moment to realize he was embarrassed.
You saw ghosts over there?
I shrugged, suppressing an urge to cackle uncontrollably. We saw something. I'm still not sure what it was. Been listening in to your guests, Isaac? He smiled and made an apologetic gesture.
Lamont's habits rubbing off on me. And since he's lost the taste for snooping, seems a shame to let the equipment go to waste.
He prodded again at the data coil.
The medical report says you all showed symptoms of a heavy stun blast. Except you and Sun, obviously.
Yeah. Sun shot herself. Abruptly, it seemed impossible to explain. Like trying to shoulder a massive weight, unaided. The last moments in the Martian starship, wrapped in the brilliant pain and radiance of whatever her crew had left behind them. The certainty that this alien grief was going to crack us open. How did you convey that to the man who had led you behind raging gunfire to victory at Shalai Gap and a dozen other engagements? How did you get across the ice-aching, diamond-bright reality of those moments?
Reality?
The doubt jolted rudely. Was it? Come to that. Come to the gun-barrel and grime reality that Isaac Carrera lived. Was it real anymore? Had it ever been? How much of what I remembered was hard fact? No, look, I've got envoy recall. But had it been that bad? I looked into the data coil, trying wearily to muster rational thought. Hand had called it, and I bought in with something not much short of panic. Hand, the Haugen. Hand, the religious maniac. When else had I ever trusted him as far as I could throw him? Why had I trusted him then? Sun. I grabbed at the fact. Sun knew. She saw it coming, and she blew her own brains out rather than face it. Carrera was looking at me strangely.
Yes?
You and Sun. Wait a minute. It dawned on me. You said, except Sun and me?
Yes. The others all show the standard electroneural trauma. Heavy blast, as I said.
But not me.
Well, no.
He looked puzzled.
You weren't touched. Why, do you remember someone shooting you?
When we were done, he flattened the data coil display with one calloused hand and walked me back through the empty corridors of the battle wagon and then across the nighttime murmur of the camp. We didn't talk much. He backed up in the face of my confusion and let the debriefing slide. Probably he couldn't believe he was seeing one of his pet envoys in this state. I was having a hard time believing it myself. She shot you. You dropped the stunner and she shot you. Then herself. She must have. Otherwise, I shivered. On a clear patch of sand to the rear of the Anjan Chandra's Virtue, they were erecting the scaffold for Suchiati's execution. The primary support struts were already in place, sunk deep into the sand and poised to receive the tilted Ronald Butcher's platform. Under the illumination from three Angier lamps and the environed floods from the battle wagon's rear drop hatch, the structure was a claw of bleached bone rising from the beach. The disassembled segments of the anatomizer lay close by, like sections of a wasp someone had chopped to death.
"The war is shifting," Carrera said conversationally. "Camps have spent force on this continent. We haven't had an airstrike in weeks. He's using the iceberg fleet to evacuate his forces across the Walkeran Straits."
"Can't he hold the coast there?" I asked the question on automatic, the ghost of attention from 100 deployment briefings past. Carrera shook his head.
"Not a chance. That's a floodplain 100 clicks back, south and east. Nowhere to dig in.
and he doesn't have the hardware to build wet bunkers. That means no long-term jamming, no net-supported weapon systems. Give me 6 more months, and I'll have amphibious armor harrying him off the whole coastal strip. Another year, and we'll be parking the Chandra over Indigo City.
And then what?
Sorry?
And then what? When you've taken Indigo City, when Kemp's bombed and mined and particle-blasted every worthwhile asset there is and escaped into the mountains with the real diehards, then what?
Well...
Carrera puffed out his cheeks. He seemed genuinely surprised by the question.
The usual? Holding strategy across both continents, limited police actions, and scapegoating until everyone calms down. But by that time...
By that time we'll be gone, right?
I shoved my hands into my pockets. Off this fucking mudball, and somewhere where they know a losing game when they see one.
Give me that much good news, at least. He looked across at me and winked.
Hun Holmes looking good. Internal power struggle, lots of palace intrigue. Just your speed.
Thanks. At the bubble fab flap, low voices filtered out into the night air. Carrera cocked his head and listened. Come in and join the party, I said morosely, pushing through ahead of him. Save you going back to Lamont's toys. The 3 remaining members of the Mandrake expedition were gathered in seats around a low table at the end of the ward. Carrera's security had broomed off the bulk of the inhib units and left each prisoner at detention standard, a single inhibitor squatting like a tumor at the nape of the neck. It made everyone look peculiarly hunched, as if caught in mid-conspiracy. They looked around as we entered the ward, reacting across a spectrum. Dupre was the least expressive. Barely a muscle moved in his face. Vongsavath caught my eye and raised her brows. Wardani looked past me to where Carrera stood and spat on the quick-wipe floor.
That's for me, I assume,
the wedge commander said easily.
Share it,
suggested the archaeologue.
You seem close enough.
Carrera smiled.
I'd advise against cracking up your hate too far, Mistress Wardani. Your little friend back there is apt to bite.
She shook her head, wordless. One hand rose in reflex, halfway to the inhib unit, then dropped away. Maybe she'd already tried removing it. It's not a mistake you make twice. Carrera walked to the splatter of saliva, bent, and scooped it up with one finger. He examined it closely, brought it to his nose, and grimaced.
You don't have long, Mistress Wardani. In your place, I'd think I'd be a little more civil to the person who's going to advise on whether you're re-sleeved or not.
I doubt that'll be your decision.
Well,
the wedge commander wiped his finger on the nearest bedsheet.
I did say advise, but then this presupposes that you make it back to landfall in some re-sleevable capacity, which you might not.
Wardani turned to me, blocking Carrera off in the process. A subtle snub that made the diplomatic strand in my conditioning want to applaud.
Is your catamite here threatening me?
I shook my head. Making a point, I think.
Too subtle for me.
She cast a disdainful glance back at the wedge commander.
Perhaps you'd better just shoot me in the stomach. That seems to work well. Your preferred method of civilian pacification, presumably.
Ah, yes. Hand.
Carrera hooked a chair from the collection around the table. He turned it back forward and straddled it.
Was he a friend of yours?
Wardani looked at him.
I didn't think so. Not your sort at all.
That has nothing to...
Did you know he was responsible for the bombing of Sabreville?
Another wordless pause. This time the archaeologue's face sagged with shock. And suddenly I saw how very far the radiation had eaten into her. Carrera saw it, too.
Yes, Mistress Wardani. Someone had to clear a path for your little quest, and Matthias Hand arranged for it to be our mutual friend Joshua Kemp. Oh, nothing direct, of course. Military misinformation, carefully modeled and then equally carefully leaked along the right data channels, but enough to convince our resident revolutionary hero in Indigo City that Sabreville would look better as a grease stain, and that 37 of my men didn't need their eyes anymore.
He flipped a glance at me.
You must have guessed, right?
I shrugged. Seemed likely. A little too convenient otherwise. Wardani's eyes snapped sideways to mine, disbelieving.
You see, Mistress Wardani...
Carrera got up as if his whole body ached.
I'm sure you'd like to believe I'm a monster, but I'm not. I'm just a man doing a job. Men like Matthias Hahn create the wars I make my living fighting. Keep that in mind next time you feel the need to insult me.
The archaeologue said nothing, but I could feel her gaze burning into the side of my face. Carrera turned to go, then stopped.
Oh, and Mistress Wardani, one more thing. Catamite.
He looked at the floor, as if pondering the word.
I have what many would consider a rather limited range of sexual preferences, and anal penetration doesn't feature among them. But I see from your camp records that the same cannot be said for you.
She made a noise. Behind it, I almost heard the creak and shift of the recovery scaffolding Envoy Artifice had built inside her. The sound of damage done. I found myself inexplicably on my feet.
Isaac, you... You?
He was grinning like a skull as he faced me.
You pup, had better sit down.
It was nearly a command, nearly froze me in my tracks. Envoy Bile rose sneering and beat it aside.
Kovac!
Wardani's voice, like a cable snapping. I met Carrera halfway, one crooked hand rising for his throat, a muddled kick emerging from the rest of my sickness-tangled stance. The big wedge body swayed in to meet me, and he blocked both attacks with brutal ease. The kick slipped away left, taking me off balance, and he locked out my striking arm at the elbow, then smashed it. It made a crunching noise in the back of my head, an empty whiskey tumbler crushed underfoot in some dimly lit bar. The agony swarmed my brain, wrenched out a single short scream, and then subsided under Nurikam pain management. Wedge combat custom. Seemed the sleeve was still good for that much. Carrera had not released his hold, and I dangled from the grip he had on my forearm like a powered-down child's doll. I flexed my undamaged arm experimentally, and he laughed. Then he twisted hard on the shattered elbow joint, so pain rose back up like a black cloud behind my eyes, and dropped me. A casual kick to the stomach left me fetal, and not interested in anything much above ankle height.
"I'll send the medics,"
I heard him say somewhere above me.
"And Mistress Wardani, I suggest you shut your mouth, or I will have some of my less sensitive men come and fill it for you. That, and maybe give you a forcible reminder of what the word catamite means. Don't test me, woman."
There was a rustle of clothing, and then he crouched at my side. One hand gripped my jaw and turned my face upward.
"You're gonna have to get that sentimental shit out of your system if you want to work for me, Kovac. Oh, and just in case you don't."
He held up a curled-up inhib spider in his hand.
"Temporary measure, purely. Just until we're done with Suciati. We'll all feel a lot safer this way."
He tipped his open palm sideways, and the inhib unit rolled sideways into space. To my endorphin-dulled senses, it seemed to take a long time. I got to watch with something approaching fascination as the spider unrolled its legs in midair and fell flailing to the floor less than a meter from my head. There it gathered itself, spun about once or twice, and then scuttled toward me. It clambered up over my face, then down around my spine. A tiny spike of ice reached down into the bone, and I felt the cable-like limbs tighten around the back of my neck. Oh, well.
"Be seeing you, Kovac. Have a think about it."
Carrera got up and apparently left. For a while, I lay there checking the seals on the cozy blanket of numbness my sleeve systems had wrapped me in. Then there were hands on my body, helping me into a sitting position I had no real interest in attaining.
"Kovac?"
It was Dupre peering into my face.
"You okay, man?"
I coughed weakly.
"Yeah, great."
He propped me against the edge of the table. Wardani moved into view above and behind him.
"Kovac?"
"Ah, sorry about that, Tanya."
I risked a searching glance at the level of control in her face.
Should have warned you not to push him. He's not like Hand. He won't take that shit.
Kovach?
There were muscles twitching her face that might have been the first crumbling of the jerry-built recovery edifice. Or not.
What are they going to do to Suchiati?
A little pool of quiet welled up in the wake of the question.
Ritual execution, said Bong Sabath. Right?
I nodded.
What does that mean?
There was an unnerving calm in Wardani's voice. I thought I might rewrite my assumptions about her state of recovery.
Ritual execution. What are they going to do?
I closed my eyes, summoned images from the last 2 years. The recollection seemed to bring a dull, seeping ache up from my shattered elbow joint. When I'd had enough, I looked at her face again. It's like an auto surgeon, I said slowly. Reprogrammed. It scans the body, maps the nervous system, measures resilience. Then they run a rendering program. Wardani's eyes widened a little.
Rendering?
It takes him apart. Flays the skin, flenses the flesh, cracks the bones. I drew on memory. Disembowels him, cooks his eyes in their sockets, shatters his teeth and probes the nerves. She made a half-formed gesture against the words she was hearing. It keeps him alive while it does it. If he looks like he's going into shock, it stops. Gives him stimulants if necessary. Gives him whatever's necessary. Apart from painkillers, obviously. Now it felt as if there were a fifth presence among us. Crouched at my side, grinning and squeezing the shards of broken bone in my arm. I sat in my own biotech-damped pain, remembering what had happened to Suchiati's predecessors while the wedge gathered to watch like the faithful at some arcane altar to the war.
How long does this last? Asked Dupre.
It depends. Most of the day. The words dragged out of me. It has to be over by nightfall. Part of the ritual. If no one stops it earlier, the machine sections and removes the skull at last light. That usually does it. I wanted to stop talking, but it seemed no one else wanted to stop me. Officers and non-coms have the option to call a coup de grace vote from the ranks, but you won't get that until late afternoon, even from the ones who want it over. They can't afford to come across softer than the rank and file. And even late, even then, I've seen the vote go against them.
Suchiati killed a Wedge platoon commander,
said Bong Sabath.
I think there will be no mercy vote. He's weak,
Wardani said hopefully.
With the radiation poisoning?
No. I flexed my right arm and a spike of pain ran up to my shoulder, even under the Nurikem. The Maori sleeves are Kontam combat designed, very high endurance.
But the Nurikem...
I shook my head. Forget it. The machine will adjust for that. Kill the pain management systems first. Rip them out.
Then he'll die.
No, he won't, I shouted. It doesn't work that way. No one said much after that. A pair of medics arrived. One, the man who had treated me earlier. The second, a hard-faced woman I didn't know. They checked my arm with elaborately non-committal competence. The presence of the inhib unit crouched on my nape, and what it said about my status both went carefully unremarked. They used an ultravibe microset to break up the bone fragments around the shattered elbow joint, then set regrowth bios in deep, long, monofilament feed lines topped off at skin level with the green marker tags and the chip that told my bone cells what to do and, more to the point, how fucking rapidly to get it done. No slacking here. Never mind what you did back in the natural world. You're part of a military custom operation now, soldier. Couple of days, said the one I knew, peeling a rapid dump endorphin dermal off the crook of my arm. We've cleared up the ragged edges, so flexing it shouldn't do any serious damage to the surrounding tissue. But it will hurt like fuck, and it slows down the healing process, so try to avoid it. I'll grip pad you so you remember. A couple of days. In a couple of days, I'd be lucky if this sleeve was still breathing. Recollection of the doctor aboard the orbital hospital flashed through my head. Oh, for fuck's sake. The absurdity of it bubbled through me and escaped as a sudden, unlooked-for grin. Hey, thanks. Don't want to slow down the healing process, do we? He smiled back weakly, then hurriedly turned his gaze to what he was doing. The grip pad went on tight from biceps to lower forearm, warm and comforting, and constricting. You part of the anatomizer crew? I asked him. He gave me a haunted look. No, that's scan-related. I don't do it.
We're done here, Martin, the woman said abruptly. Time to go.
Yeah. But he moved slowly, unwillingly, as he folded up the battlefield kit pack. I watched the contents disappearing, taped over surgical tools and the strips of brightly colored dermals in their tugged-down sleeves. Hey, Martin. I nodded at the pack. You gonna leave me a few of those pinks? I was planning to sleep late, you know. The female medic cleared her throat.
Martin, we aren't...
Oh, shut the fuck up, will you?
He turned on her with fury boiling up out of nowhere. Envoy instinct kicked me in the head. Behind his back, I reached for the pack.
You don't rank me, Zainab. I'll dispense what I fucking like, and you...
It's okay, I said quietly. I got them anyway. Both medics fixed on me. I held up the trailing strip of endorphin dermals I'd grabbed free in my left hand. I smiled thinly. Don't worry. I won't take them all at once.
Maybe you should,
said the female medic.
Sir.
Zainab, I told you to shut up.
Martin gathered up the kit pack in a hurry, tightening it in his arms, cradling it.
They're fast-acting. No more than three at any one time. That will keep you under whatever you hear.
He swallowed.
Whatever is going on around you.
Thanks. They gathered the rest of their equipment and left. Zainab looked back at me from the bubble fab flap and her mouth twisted. Her voice was too low for me to catch what she said. Martin raised his arm in a cuffing gesture, and they both ducked out. I watched them go, then looked down at the strip of dermals in my clenched fist.
That's your solution?
Asked Wardani in a small, cold voice.
Take drugs and watch it all slide out of you.
Do you have a better idea? She turned away. Then get down off that fucking prayer tower and keep your self-righteousness to yourself.
We could...
We could what? We're inhibited. We're most of us a couple of days off death from catastrophic cell damage. And I don't know about you, but my arm hurts. Oh, yeah. And this whole place is wired for sight and sound to the political officer's cabin, which, I imagine, Carrera has ready access to when he wants it. I felt a slight twinge from the things on the nape of my neck, and realized my own anger was getting the better of my weariness. I locked it down. I've done all the fighting I'm going to do, Tanya. Tomorrow we get to spend the day listening to Suchiati die. You deal with that any way you want. Me... I'm going to sleep through it. There was a searing satisfaction in throwing the words out at her, like twisting shrapnel out of a wound in your own flesh. But somewhere underneath it, I kept seeing the camp commandant, shut down in his chair, current running, the pupil of his remaining human eye bumping idly against the upper lid. If I lay down, I'd probably never get up again. I heard the words again, whispering out of him like dying breath. So I stay in this... chair. The discomfort wakes me, periodically. I wondered what kind of discomfort I'd need at this stage of the game. What kind of chair I'd need to be strapped into. Somewhere, there's gotta be a way off this fucking beach. And I wondered why the hand at the end of my injured arm was not empty. Chapter 39 Suchiati started screaming shortly after it got light. Outraged fury for the first few seconds, almost reassuring in its humanity. But it didn't last. In less than a minute, every human element boiled away to the white bone of animal agony. In that form it came searing up the beach from the butcher's slab, shriek after pealing shriek filling the air like something solid, hunting listeners. We had been waiting for it since before the dawn, but it still hit like a shock wave. A visible flinch through each of us where we sat hunched on beds no one had even tried to sleep in. It came for us all, and touched us with a sickening intimacy. It laid clammy hands over my face and clamped a grip on my ribcage, stopping breath, spiked the hairs on my neck, and sent a single twitch through one eye. At my nape, the inhib unit tasted my nervous system and stirred interestedly. Lock it down. Behind the shrieking ran another sound I knew. The low growl of an aroused audience. The wedge, seeing justice done. Cross-legged on the bed, I opened my fists. The dermal strips fell to the quilt. Something flickered. I saw the dead visage of the Martian, printed across my vision so clear it might have been a retinal display. This chair wakes me. Spinning motes of shadow and light. Dirge of alien grief. I could feel a Martian visage in among the swirl of brilliant pain. Not dead. Great unhuman eyes that met mine with something that... I shuddered away from it. The human scream ran on, ripping along nerves, digging into marrow. Wardani buried her face in her hands. I shouldn't be feeling this bad, a detached part of me argued. This isn't the first time I've... Unhuman eyes. Unhuman screams. Vongsavath began to weep. I felt it rising in me, gathering in spirals the way the Martians had done. The inhib unit tensed. No, not yet. Envoy control. Cold and methodical unpicking of human response just when I needed it. I welcomed it like a lover on Wardani's sunset beach. I think I was grinning as it came on. Outside on the slab, Suchiati screamed, pleading denial, the words wrenched out of him like something drawn with pliers. I reached down to the grip pad on my arm and tugged it slowly toward my wrist. Twinges ran through the bone beneath as the movement snagged the regrowth biotags. Suchiati screamed, ragged glass over tendon and gristle in my head. The inhibitor... Cold, cold. The grip pad reached my wrist and dangled loose. I reached for the first of the biotags. Someone might be watching this from Lamont's cabin, but I doubted it. Too much else on the menu right now. And besides, who watches detainees with inhibitor systems crouched on their spines? What's the point? Trust the machine and get on with something more rewarding. Suchiati screamed. I gripped the tag and applied evenly mounting pressure. You're not doing this, I reminded myself. You're just sitting here listening to a man die, and you've done enough of that in the past couple of years for it not to bother you. No big deal. The envoy systems, fooling every adrenal gland in my body, and plastering me with a layer of cool detachment. I believed what I told myself at a level deeper than thought. On my neck, the inhibitor twitched and snugged itself down again. A tiny tearing in the regrowth biofilament came out. Too short. Cold. Suchiati screamed. I selected another tag and tugged it gently side to side. Beneath the surface of the skin, I felt the monofilament slice tissue down to the bone in a direct line and knew it was also too short. I looked up and caught Dupre looking at me. His lips framed a question. I gave him a distracted little smile and tried another tag. Suchiati screamed. The fourth tag was the one. I felt it slicing flesh in a long curve through and around my elbow. The single endorphin dermal I'd shot earlier kept the pain to a minor inconvenience, but the tension still ran through me like wires. I took a fresh grip on the envoy lie that absolutely nothing was happening here, and pulled hard. The filament came up like a kelp cable out of damp beach sand, ripping a furrow through the flesh of my forearm. Blood spritzed my face. Suchiati screamed, searing, sawing up and down a scale of despair and disbelief at what the machine was doing to him, at what he could feel happening to the sinewed fibers of his body.
Kovach, what the fuck are you...
Wardani shut up as I cut her a look and jabbed a finger at my neck. I wrapped the filament carefully around my left palm, knotted it behind the tag. Then, not giving myself time to think about it, I splayed my hand and drew the noose smoothly and rapidly tight. Nothing is happening here. The monofilament sliced into my palm, went down through the pad of tissue as if